Hello everybody and welcome to a new EduQuest interview. As always, we are on the search for better education. I'm very happy to be joined by Vikas Pota. He is he is many things. So amongst Global Head of Corporate Affairs of the GEMS Education and the Chief Executive of the Vaki GEMS Foundation as well. And one of the newly awarded Young Global Leaders of the World Economic Forum. So Vikas, congratulations on that and happy to have you on the program.
Thank you. You're very kind.
All right. So we are talking basically on the eve of a conference you and your team are setting up in Dubai called the Education and Skills Forum. And sort of, although Dubai and the whole region are not or is not short of conferences, forums, fairs, and so on at the moment, sort of as a level set for our audience, GEMS Education is private, for-profit kindergarten and K-12 schools. I already mentioned in the introduction the foundation, so the philanthropic topic efforts. But how do we have to imagine the landscape or the educational landscape in the region to sort of get this started?
If you look at the, thank you very much, Kirsten, for that introduction. If you look at the landscape, what you have is, most of us have been to a school. We can say you and I understand what the experience of a teacher is, what a classroom is. But to be honest, back in the early 2000s, there was something called there was an initiative called the Millennium Development Goals, which were formulated that said that all children must be in school by 2015, which is only 2 years away. And yet, although a lot of progress has been made, yet there are 70 million children who currently do not go to school. And that's an alarming statistic which bothers me day in, day out. So for their sake, we need to think about how we can fix this education crisis that exists. In today's age, there's no reason why this is the case. And therefore, we need more innovative solutions, we need better collaborative thinking, and we need to really consider what shifts we need to make in policy to make sure that these children are brought into the education mainstream. The second thing is that once you have them in schools, the statistics show that there are hundreds of millions of people that are illiterate. So they go to school, but they don't learn. They can't read or write. Surely something's broken there. So what the Vaki GEMS Foundation is doing is putting together a low-cost teacher training module that addresses the training and training requirements of a classroom teacher. And that's fundamentally important if you're, again, trying to fix the education problem and the crisis. Mm-hmm. So this conference comes at a time where you have the backdrop of the statistics, you have 2015 looming up very quickly, and we need to reimagine what the future is and how we address these challenges. That's what the conference is there for. It's in partnership with UNESCO, the UN body for education. It's in partnership with the Commonwealth and the Dubai Ministry of Education.
So how do we have to imagine that through your experience, aid through governmental organizations and also NGOs has of course been there and been implemented. Where does it lack? Why is sort of your approach in teacher training, and why do you think it's going to be more effective or let's say more beneficial for the people than previous attempts to solve the education crisis?
It's a very interesting question that you pose, Kirsten. I think if you look at the way the world works today, you have government, you have NGOs, all of which do a sterling job. There's no denying it. However, we think the fundamental aspect is to invite members of the private sector to also contribute their ideas. And that's what the effort of this conference is. You know, it's about public-private partnerships in education. We think that in these austere times where there's a financial crisis that has crippled the world, crippled spending, has almost made Europe bankrupt, for example, and has a more devastating impact on aid programs in Africa and other places. You need to find innovative ways of working. And the private sector has demonstrated time and time again that they are innovators, they are disruptors, they challenge thinking. And it's some of that thinking that we need to bring to these problems. You know, we in healthcare, we have a great example in Bill Gates, mm-hmm. you know, who brings all of his corporate experience, all of his private sector ways of doing things. And look at the fundamental difference that they're making with regards to global issues like malaria, like polio, and such matters. Who is the Bill Gates of education? And what are the practices that are being unfurled today? Mm-hmm. So that's what this conference, is bringing together participants from almost 50 countries. We have education ministers, we have heads of state, we have business leaders, we have NGOs, we have academics. Let's consider, you know, how is it that we can work together and not be held back by ideology, but be very pragmatic, because there are 70 million children who don't learn, who don't go to school, and there's hundreds of millions of people who don't know how to read or write. This can't be good for the sake of our world.
And supposedly Dubai as sort of the location for the Education and Skills Forum, I guess the thriving private school market, if I'm not completely mistaken, it's 65% in the United Arab Emirates alone, plays a role in this. As you find, do you already find innovative solutions there, or what's the state of education in this region?
You're right. Dubai and the United Arab Emirates could be a model that the world could emulate. It doesn't seem obvious from the outset, but if you look at the way that they have evolved an education framework, education policy, it's something that actually the world needs to look at more closely. You know, if you look at GEMS Education, the company I work for, we run schools in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi and other parts of the Emirates, where when you think about a traditional private sector funded education, you think very expensive. But we also have schools at different price points which make education affordable. So we have schools which could be as little as $1,000 a year. But then, yes, we also have schools for parents who want to afford more and have more facilities and have those privileges. So, you know, you don't have a one-size-fits-all. We have customized. We have learned what the demographics are. And by doing so, you provide choice. And it's that choice that ultimately leads to better education outcomes, that choice that leads to satisfied parents, is that choice that I think people need to understand. When they think about private education, it's not always just about elite, very expensive, and a lot of waste. That is what it's come to be known for. But yes, there are different ways of doing things. And in Dubai, we demonstrate that this takes place.
Besides, of course, it being an interesting, even lucrative market, what is the policy like? Is it more open than in other markets you might be looking at? How is it to open or a school there, or maybe to implement new curricula, etc.?
So the Dubai government and the UAE government are very welcoming of private sector operators in education. Like you said, a large percentage, I think you mentioned 65% of education provision is in the private sector. And that itself shows that they're open to new ways of thinking and doing things. If you look at our schools in the UAE, our students regularly get marks in exams set by national curricula of different places in the world that are above and beyond the averages in these countries. And so whether you're a child paying $1,000 or a family paying $1,000 a year or a family paying $20,000 a year, you're guaranteed that your education outcomes are that much better. Mm-hmm. And that's what GEMS has become known for and specializes. But I think the question that you ask is very appropriate. If you go to a place, say, for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, and you say to them, look, I want to put up schools, the government will roll the red carpet up. They understand that, you know, being ideological isn't necessarily the right answer, because they need schools, they need education, they need trained staff, they need to build the capacities of institutions, And by inviting foreign entities and companies like us into their countries, you know, there's a natural cascade and domino effect that improves and brings the level of education in these countries higher. Mm-hmm. You know, in other places where you do have ideological differences, mainly in the Western developed markets, you know, it can be difficult. But yes, there is a space for private education. The one thing we're clear on is that we agree that education is for the public good. You know, there's no difference of opinion on that. The difference of opinion from GEMS comes from, you know, we believe that, governments should be engaging companies like ours increasingly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I read that by 2016, so in roughly 3 years, the market in e-learning, which I guess contains everything about content, tools, platforms, and you will tell me if teacher training as well, is estimated in revenues to be $560 million, which is quite a bit, frankly. So how are you dealing with that? Is e-learning a big thing at the moment, and also for the conference? Because obviously I read something about that in the program.
Yeah.
How does the teacher training fit in? Is it also for some interesting in some of your philanthropic efforts, or do you say better low on technology but invest in the people? What's your take on that? Probably different in Dubai itself than in yeah. some of the other regions.
It's really interesting, the question again, in terms of if you look at technology and education, the figure that you mentioned of 500 million is a drop in the ocean, in my opinion. You know, the way society works now is all based around technology. And the more we do to embrace that and to look at how new programs can be structured, new delivery mechanisms created, I think we're just beneficial. I take my own personal example. If you take my children, when I was growing up, we'd have a dictionary, a thesaurus, and those kind of tools. Today they have Google, you know, and they have Skype. In fact, they learn maths through Mathletics. They use Schoolbo for reading and writing. These are all the tools that are available for free online, and they are being embraced at home in particular. We use them for our children. In schools, a similar thing is happening, you know, because you can't have a situation where your home environment is so different to what your school environment is.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, yes, we are, as a company, embracing technology in our schools. We believe that the future is of a blended curriculum, a blended classroom, and we are making strides towards that. That's for the company. But if you look at, whoever works out how technology can be applied in the developmental context,
mm-hmm.
I think deserves a Nobel. I say it as strongly as that. If you look at some of the areas that we our foundation works. You know, if you look at rural Uganda, the situation that you have there is that, how can you have any technology without electricity?
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah.
It's a very simple thing. In many of these contexts, you know, they don't even have paper to write on. So the issue about teacher training and teacher preparing classrooms, you know, we're used to sitting on our desks and writing on pieces of paper. They don't even have that. Mm-hmm. You know, so whoever comes up with a solid proposition for that context, I think will change drastically the progress of humanity and our world. This conference, you know, brings together some of the leading experts in EdTech. So we have, for example, we have Professor Anand Agarwal of edX, which is the joint venture between MIT and Harvard. He's speaking about what they've been experimenting in and how that's unfurling. We also have this lovely girl who I met in Davos, in fact. Her name is Khadija Niazi, and she's an 11-year-old girl from Pakistan who, alongside going to school, unveiled the fact that she's doing a course in astrobiology on Judacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we want to understand from her, why is it that she felt the need to do that?
Mm-hmm.
We are trying to understand what the future of higher education is as a result of technology. Ultimately, you're seeing a lot of disruption in the higher education space. But in the K-12 space, we're not seeing as much. It's not as high profile.
And it seems to be more challenging. Yeah, definitely.
The next phase is exactly that. You know, so you have the likes of Khan Academy who are doing things. You know, you have examples like that. But what is the future for K-12 in education? It's really interesting. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to these tech experts actually speak to us regarding what's happening out there. I mentioned gamification. I think gamification is critical to how things will unfold. You know, so we're having Shane from who was the founder of Mathletics speak to us regarding, you know, how is it that gamification can be employed to teach children how to read and write. I think that's fascinating. You know, like I said to you, my kids back in London, they do exactly that. But why can't a child in Uganda, in South Sudan, in Cambodia, or wherever it is, use the same technology, the same models of doing so?
Very fascinating. As this is going to take place in Dubai, I think the UAE have been more or less constantly looking into e-learning from the early 90s, so pretty early on. And as we said, depending on the place in the world, the challenges and requirements are, of course, drastically different. What is the government in the UAE thinking about e-learning?
Well, I know, for example, they have some massive initiatives when it comes to e-learning, both in higher education as well as in basic education. Mm-hmm. You know, the critical thing is when it comes to technology deployment is that this is not, we have to be focused, this is not about which technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is about ultimately about improving outcomes. And so let's not get wrapped up with the fact that technology is being used. Let's look at what are the outcomes that we're seeing as a result of these new initiatives and new ventures being implemented. And there are lots of studies and there's lots of analysis which will demonstrate what the benefit is.
So then I hope we will have some interesting and insightful, I'm sure, outcomes of the keynotes and other talks and panels at the Education and Skills Forum. Is there something for the audience? Is there a live stream maybe, or can we follow this on Twitter or other social media outlets?
Oh, absolutely. We are social media to the hilt. So the conference is being live streamed on our website, which you can visit at educationandskillsforum.org. We also have a live satellite link session with President Clinton. So please do ask your questions to him. You can hashtag Ask Clinton, and we will select live whilst we're doing the interview some questions. And likewise, you know, please follow us on Twitter. The hashtag is GESF for Global Education Skills Forum. Please do stay in touch. We're interested in your views. You know, this is not just about governments, it's not just about NGOs, it's not really the private sector, but what do we as parents, what do we as students want? We also have two youth ambassadors who have come forward and are going to be live blogging from the conference, which I think which will be interesting given their perspective in life, and they have their futures in front of them. And what they're hearing, does it interest them?
Absolutely, yeah. So, well, that's great. I'm definitely looking forward on following up. And thank you, Vikas, so much for coming on today. I'm sure you are incredibly busy and still sort of setting up the last things before the forum gets started. And, well, best of luck and success for the next days.
You're very kind. Thank you very much. I enjoyed the conversation.